Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 20th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Permian Basin International Oil Show. Industry on the rebound. Oil show returns after coronavirus caused event to be canceled in 20. By Mella McEwen. Odessa. After 18 months that saw global economies shutter and oil markets crash because of the COVID-19 pandemic, upbeat visitors swarmed the Ector County Coliseum as the Permian Basin International Oil Show opened its gates. The crowd tells me the industry is on the mend, said Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright, as opening ceremonies concluded and show officials prepared to open the gates after the show had been delayed a year because of the pandemic. Attendees and exhibitors alike said the last 18 months had been tough. But like Wright, they see the industry on the rebound. Work at Arts Inspection and Pipe Service was improving, said Emilio Garcia. We're working, not as much as we'd like. People are still scared, still skittish, hesitant to spend. We're looking forward to more work. He said employees used the slowdown to take the opportunity to do work that they had been too busy to do, like maintain their trucks and equipment. Arts Inspection owner Arthur Farrell said he had to lay off workers during the slowdown and give bonuses to those who remained. We're going to stay real small, he said, as the industry continues to recover. Danny Singleton with Gasket Services, Inc. said business had been slow last year, but the company managed to stay afloat. No one lost their jobs, and though some had their hours cut, it was nothing dramatic, he said. We remained open the whole time, he said, since the company is expected to provide gaskets at any time. Business has been steadily picking up, he said. I suspect it will be better next year. It depends on the price of oil. Super Rod cut its staffing to cope with the downturn, said Scott Emerson. Now we're trying to put them back on the payroll, but they found other jobs. What is really affecting his business is the supply chain bottleneck that is affecting virtually every business, he said. All the material I use for fiberglass rods is on container ships, Emerson said. This article is entitled Oil Show Notebook. Environmental Concerns, Virus, Safety, Big Topics of Conversation by Mella McEwen. Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright, attending the oil show at the invitation of past oil show President Kirk Edwards, said he and the agency are focused on implementing Senate Bill 3, designed to ensure energy supplies will remain available in the event of an extreme weather event like Winter Storm Uri back in February. He said he's worked with the Public Utility Commission, pipelines, and producers to ensure energy will continue to flow. He has asked producers to detail where the gas they produce is going and on the contracts for that gas. Seismicity is also a concern, he said, referring to the Commission's recent request to operators in the Midland area to reduce the volumes of water they inject in order to address seismic activity in the area. He said he's proud of how producers volunteered to comply with that request. I think we've turned around our reputation. Seismic flaring. We've come a long way, and I feel there will be continued improvement, he said. HR concerns like vaccine mandate. Smaller businesses without the resources to have human resources departments turn to companies like Ironwood Business Consulting, which helps clients comply with safety, human resource, Department of Transportation, and contractor compliance. Right now, HR specialists like Ironwood are watching the progress of the COVID-19 vaccine mandate, said Christine Beldner, Vice President and Senior HR Consultant. She said her company has been providing webinars on the mandate, and when the Occupational Safety and Health Administration releases its rules requiring private companies with 100 employees or more to mandate vaccinations, new webinars will be offered. And with Governor Greg Abbott among those pushing back against the federal mandates, it will be an interesting fourth quarter. Kara Vines, DOT HSE consultant, said Texas HB 19, which was signed by Governor Abbott this summer, could have an impact in the Permian Basin, where there are so many accidents involving commercial vehicles. The bill requires that when a lawsuit is filed after a crash, the driver must be found liable for a crash before a case can be brought against the employer. Supporters say this will prevent ambulance chasing attorneys from going after big trucking companies, she said, while critics say it makes it harder for crash victims to win damages and make Texas roads even less safe. That's a big gasket. Think gaskets, and the small ones in your car may come to mind. But in the oil patch, some gaskets big enough for a 6-foot-tall man to walk through are required. There are so many applications, said Danny Singleton with Gasket Service, Inc. He said custom cutting is the company's specialty. Clients may run into an application where they can't find or buy what they need. We can make it for them. He said most gaskets are used in oil field or pipeline applications, but there are other applications as well. Around here, they want to make sure everything's clean. If there's a leak, they jump on it, Singleton said. Emissions control booths at show. A number of booths touted emissions control efforts at the oil show. The last year has been really busy, said Steve Ruedas with Leak Surveys, Inc., whose clients include EOG Resources and Energy Transfer. Usually it slows down this time of year, but not this year. David Furry, president of Leak Surveys and inventor of the optical gas imaging camera, said his company has done a lot of work for industry clients as well as the federal government. The company has built an OGI camera into a stabilized gimbal on a helicopter that flies survey tank batteries or well pads and helps detect small leaks. The Environmental Protection Agency has pushed and pushed surveys, and now the industry is turning around saying they need to know about leaks before the EPA takes action, he said. The industry is not only taking steps to survey and monitor for emissions, but implementing LDAR, leak detection and repair initiatives, Furry said. The company's helicopter surveys are surprisingly inexpensive, he said, and can survey 100 tank batteries a day, depending on how close they are. The company recently did a survey of university lands in the Permian Basin, he said. We need to fix this issue, and we can, he said. He noted that after he launched his OGI camera, he did surveys of downstream operations in the Houston area. By pinpointing leaks that were repaired, ethylene emissions fall 60%, he said. That will happen here. When safety comes first. Benito and Matilda Loya founded Resolute Safety in Odessa last year, just as the pandemic took hold. We're still here, Benito said. As the industry rebounds, he said, Resolute is picking up more safety training contracts. Clients are primarily smaller companies without the resources to offer comprehensive safety training. Its top three courses are Safeland, which trains workers to deal with hazardous situations like hydrogen sulfide gas or dangerous levels of electricity, First Aid, CPR, and H2S Clear, which trains workers to identify H2S on the job site, how to react, and emergency protocols to protect others. A trucking company just contacted the company about H2S training for its drivers, he said. We're here now to expand and build the company, build a bigger customer base. Spill response is in big demand. Despite the downturn, oil companies didn't stop spending on environmental compliance. Bobby Bowles, national sales manager with Talon LPE, said business had slowed but is coming back. Talon offers spill response. In big demand in the Permian Basin due to spills from hydraulic fracturing, Bowles said. And soil and groundwater remediation. Monitoring air for asbestos and helping obtain air permits are also on Talon's service menu. So is environmental drilling, where the company can drill to differing depths and take soil samples in the event of, for example, a pipeline break or water samples. Spill response is in big demand, said Bowles of the Amarillo-based company, which also has offices in Midland and Artesia, New Mexico. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, October 20th. Daniel Ray Hossel. Daniel Ray Hossel, 35, of Midland, passed from this life on Saturday, October 16th. Memorial service will be held at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 21st. Daniel was born November 20th, 1985, in Midland, to Linda Hossel Robb and Robert Bobby Hopkins. Daniel was raised by his grandparents, Richard and Karina Hossel of Midland. Daniel is survived by his parents, Richard and Karina Hossel, mother, Linda Hossel, Rob, John, younger brother, Nicholas Hubbard, his uncle, Richard Hossel Jr., and aunt, Lisa Olguin, Robert, and great-grandfather, Jose Reyes, all of Midland. Daniel is preceded in death by maternal great-grandmother, Rosa Reyes, paternal great-grandmother, Cecilia Ravia Gonzalez. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Jackie Lynn Hanna. Jackie Lynn Hanna, 94, went to be with her Lord on Friday, October 8th. Jackie was predeceased by both of her husbands, her parents, siblings, her beloved sister-in-law, Nolly Sullins, and several nieces and nephews. She is survived by daughter Linda Hollibaugh, Philip, daughter Terry Hayden, Paul, son Larry Lynn Niella, 5 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, and several nieces. There was a private family graveside service held at Resthaven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family asked that charitable donations be made in remembrance of Jackie to First Christian Church of Midland, St. Jude's Hospital, or your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. James Dayton Dakey Howell died on October 10th, 2021 at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was 67 years old, born on June 3rd, 1954. Surviving sisters are Sharon Babcock of Midland, Carol Standifer of Abilene, and a host of relatives and family. Services will be held on October 21st at Jackie Warren Funeral Home in Midland, 702 South Terrell. Oscar Obnowski. Oscar went to be with Heavenly Father Monday, October 11th in San Angelo. He was born February 14th, 1952 to Bernard and Henrietta Obnowski. Oscar grew up in Midland. He was preceded in death by his father Bernard, mother Henrietta, sister Betty, 2 brothers Wayne and Ray, daughter Lisa, great-nephew Antonio. He is survived by wife Kitty of San Angelo, daughter Becky McClure and husband David of Midland, 6 grandchildren, and 16 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation in Oscar's name to Purrs and Puppy Breath in San Angelo. Roger Farrell Boyd. Roger Farrell Boyd was born in Abilene on September 1st, 1933, to Farrell and Fairy Lee Boyd. He entered the gates of heaven on October 17th. The family will receive friends from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, October 20th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 21st at Abilene Municipal Cemetery in Abilene. Roger is survived by his wife, Iwanda, son Roger Boyd, Deanna of Odessa, daughter Darla Batla, Gary of St. Lawrence, 3 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and sisters Jean Dalton and Wanda Beard, and numerous nieces and nephews. Roger is preceded in death by his parents and grandchildren, Clinton Boyd, Boyd Batla, and Kayla Boyd Knox. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Tamara Lee Maxson Wilson. Tamara Lee Maxson Wilson was born on December 20, 1962, to Rodney and Millie Maxson in Fort Smith, Arkansas. There was a celebration of life visitation with the family on Sunday, October 17th, at the offices of Berger Haggard, 2501 Ridgemar Plaza, Fort Worth. There will be a formal funeral on Monday, October 25th, at 11 a.m. at Holy Cross Lutheran Church, 5110 North Garfield, Midland. Burial will be private at a later date in Midland. Though Tammy had tons of charities, the family has chosen Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Midland for any memorials. Tammy is survived by her precious 3 grandchildren. Also surviving are her children, Lindsay and James McGraw of Arlington, Brian Wilson of Forney, and Brittany Wilson of Arlington. Her parents, Rodney and Millie Maxson of Midland, her siblings, Debbie Lawrence of Midland, Kent, Cindy Maxson of Nashville, and Joan, Steve Mayo of Denison, along with beloved nieces. Jace Montoya. Jace was born in Odessa on March 25, 2005. Jace attended elementary school in Midland, where he spent a majority of his life. Jace is preceded in death by both sets of grandparents and his uncle Nick Buddy Montoya. He is survived by his mother, Sarah Montoya, maternal grandparents, John and Kathy Montoya, Aunt Jessica Montoya, and her son Ethan, cousins, and many uncles and aunts. Death notices. James Davidson. James Davidson, 23, passed away October 17th. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 22nd, followed by a rosary at 7 p.m. at the branch at NPW. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 23rd at Natalie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Mary Joyce Melancon Elder. Mary Joyce Melancon Elder passed away October 15th. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 22nd, with a rosary following at 7 p.m. at Natalie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 23rd at St. Anne's Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolence may be made to www.npwelch.com.
This is Mackie, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American today. Oil Show Kicks into High Gear by Bob Campbell. Transactions flourish on first day of technology exhibition. With vehicles in every space around the Ector County Coliseum and overflow lots filling fast at Ratliff Stadium and North Golder Avenue and West 42nd Street, the Permian Basin International Oil Show was booming at midday Tuesday with optimism in the air and big money changing hands. Mixing with the lively crowd inside the Coliseum was Texas Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright of Austin, who said the new technology was impressive. Walking through these aisles this morning, it's amazing how the advances in technology continue to make sure that we are best utilizing our resources, Wright said. I consider the Odessa and Midland area the heart of our oil and gas production here in this state. I figure if I'm going to be regulating something, I ought to be out here with my boots on the ground. Wright said compliance to date appears good with the RRC's September 23rd request for a half dozen area companies to curtail their saltwater injections into disposal wells, but he and fellow commissioners Wayne Christian and Christy Craddock are monitoring the requests that are aimed at reducing earthquakes and that they will chastise operators who do not cooperate. We've asked that they limit their injections to no more than 10,000 barrels a day because some were up around 30,000, Wright said. The commissioner said he is not confident that the Electric Reliability Council of Texas and the state's power grid will avoid a repetition of last February's statewide blackout that kept millions of Texans in the deep freeze for days on end. I'm not confident because of the way our grid system is set up with our renewable or solar and reliable or fossil fuel resources, he said. It's important to have reliable resources in Texas so that people can walk into their houses and flip the switch and have the lights come on, Wright said. Asked why a third of ERCOT's 15 board members were from out of state and had to be asked to resign, he said, some people were not paying attention. I'm sure they were intelligent, but you need to live in Texas to be dedicated. The oil show continues Wednesday and Thursday. Inside the Coliseum, Sims Plastic Branch manager Scott Vogel said his Odessa company had been an oil show member since the 1970s, and its offices in Odessa, Midland, and Waco were offering septic tanks, water tanks, gas pipe and fittings, PVC pipe, chemical feed pumps, and other products. I enjoy seeing the other vendors and the new products they have available, Vogel said. Triple M Oil Tool and its allied Vista Sales and Service of Odessa had a decked-out booth with newly manufactured 1,600 and 3,500-pound blowout preventers, front and center, explaining that blowout preventers are used on new wells and production wells to contain well bore fluids. Vista sales manager Kevin Hughes said the BOPs are bolted onto the well heads at the bottom. We can make anything if you have a pattern or print, Hughes said. Triple M operations manager Glenn Lawson supervises his company's manufacture of rubber products, including top seals for BOPs. Noting that Triple M has 35 employees, Lawson said, we stay shorthanded. All the time. We need press operators. Beard Equipment sales representative Terry Moeller of Midland had just sold a big rock bucket with tempered steel teeth to a rancher who needed it for some hard digging near Brady in central Texas. Moeller said Beard sells and rents equipment made by the Epiroc, Hitachi, Strickland, Kobelco, Atlas Copco, JLG, Continental Cargo, and Genie companies, including a Genie forklift that was displayed in the outdoor booth with the capability of reaching 56 feet high. Landon Brockman of San Angelo, South Texas, sales manager for Yellow House John Deere, said his company had brought two wheel loaders, a giant dump truck, and a backhoe for outside exhibits on the beautiful bright blue October day. The John Deere Model 944 wheel loader weighs 110,000 pounds, and its little brother, the Model 844, 80,000 pounds, Brockman said. He said the equipment is used to haul and load sand for oil field fracking operations and that it had been moved here on three trucks. Yellow House John Deere also has branches in Amarillo, Lubbock, Abilene, Wichita Falls, Odessa, and Midland, and in Oklahoma at Sand Springs, McAllister, Enid, and Broken Bow. Riken Pump Operations Administrator Don Cahill of Odessa said, pumps are central to the oil field for moving fluids and other functions. Riken sells submersible pumps, fuel transfer systems, precision meters, centrifugal pumps, automatic nozzles, spill containers, tank gauges, and oil and grease pumps. Odessa, Midland worked together for mental health. Landgraf, Craddock worked together to secure funding for facility. Permian Basin legislators and hospital CEOs worked together to bring what will be a behavioral health facility that will be located between Odessa and Midland as soon as 2024. Senate Bill 8, legislation directing how the state will spend federal dollars allocated to Texas under the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 was passed out of the House and Senate on Monday. The legislation includes $40 million for a behavioral health center that will be constructed and operated by the hospital districts of Midland and Ector County. State Representatives Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, and Tom Craddock, Republican, Midland, worked together to ensure the funding was included in the final version of the bill. This $40 million to construct a new mental health hospital will improve quality of life in Odessa, Midland, and throughout the Permian Basin. Russell Tippin and Russell Myers worked together, Representative Tom Craddock and I worked together, and Odessa and Midland worked together on this. I'm thankful we were able to get this done for our region that desperately needs better access to mental health services, Landgraf said. The center will include 100 inpatient beds and outpatient psychiatric care facilities, along with a crisis stabilization unit, professional offices, and counseling and therapeutic spaces appropriate for all ages. Texans who live in the Permian Basin currently have to drive to Lubbock or San Angelo to access similar care. Also, law enforcement officials often have to drive those in a mental health crisis to facilities, which takes the officers away from their primary duties and also places a burden on family members being placed far away from Midland and Odessa. In the weeks and months after the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting, local leaders in Odessa and Midland identified the need for additional behavioral and mental health services in our region. COVID-19 put that discussion on hold momentarily. I'm thankful that we kept the drumbeat going and that our communities have come together to accomplish this important goal. I'm proud of our work together, Landgraf added. Senate Bill 8 now heads to the governor's desk for signature, the final stage in the legislative process. If Senate Bill 8 is signed into law, it is expected that the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center will be completed by 2024. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said via email that mental health is the number one public health need in the Permian Basin, and this funding is a massive step in the right direction. We are thrilled to partner with our friends at Midland Health to start this venture and be the top provider of mental health care in West Texas. We also want to thank State Representative Brooks Landgraf and State Representative Tom Craddock for their efforts in making this dream become a reality. Tippin previously said he and MMH President and CEO Russell Myers have been discussing the issue for a long time and agree behavioral health services are the greatest need facing the Permian Basin. Both hospital boards have already approved the joint effort proposed by Tippin and Myers. In a news release, Craddock stated that West Texas has a dire need for quality mental health care. The mental health hospital is a great stride towards meeting the mental health needs of West Texas. I am honored to have worked on securing this funding and look forward to this facility being a resource for generations to come. Jury Out on Earthquake Remedies by Bob Campbell. Railroad Commission's voluntary cuts in saltwater pumping may take a year to work. It appears that most, if not all, of a half dozen oil companies will comply with the Texas Railroad Commission's request to reduce their saltwater injections into disposal wells and thereby mitigate the increasing problem of earthquakes around the Permian Basin. But it may be a year before the quakes subside. That is if the reductions work. Fasken Oil and Ranch Rattler Midstream Operating COG Operating Occidental Permian Pioneer Natural Resources and Wasser Operating were asked September 23rd to decrease their daily pumping to fewer than 10,000 barrels, and spokesmen say they'll do it. Fasken Oil Director Tommy Taylor said his company's five wells were only injecting 5,000 to 8,000 barrels per day anyway in the Gardendale seismic response area, so the RRC's initiative won't impede business. Taylor, chairman-elect of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, said he had been watching this for several years as it progressed. Part of those earthquakes were off to the east of Fasken's property, but most of them were south, he said. Taylor said it is a very complex problem to solve because the source or sources of the tremors are hard to pinpoint in the San Andres and Ellenberger formations and the Midland and Delaware basins underground. However, referring to similar actions taken by the RRC in the Azle area west of Fort Worth and by the Oklahoma Corporation Commission in Oklahoma, he said reducing the injection volumes at Azle and in Oklahoma helped in those areas, and I suspect it will help here as well. It may take up to a year before we see a reduction in the earthquakes, but hopefully the ones we feel, the 3.0 on the Richter scale, that shake the house and above will subside earlier. Noting that companies whose stocks are publicly traded as less willing to make public comments than those like Fasken, who are privately owned, Taylor said, all the operators are concerned about it. We have top scientists looking at it and are trying to resolve it as quickly as we can. He said many of the more severe quakes have occurred over the Delaware Basin in the Kermit area about 40 miles west of Odessa, where nobody is around but cowboys, cows, and oil and gas people, so they've gotten less attention than the ones that have repeatedly jarred things between Odessa and Midland. Most people will comply and try to do the right thing, Taylor said, adding that numerous quakes have also been recorded around Monahans and Pecos, and into eastern New Mexico, which is considered part of the basin. The RRC said it had stopped issuing permits for saltwater disposal wells in the Gardendale seismic response area, and that its notice to operators was an administrative action by RRC staff to move toward mitigating earthquakes near Midland and Odessa and better protect public safety and the environment, which is critical to the mission of the agency. Asked why the notice was a request rather than an order, RRC spokesman Andrew Keese said, "We have already had a good response from some operators in the response area, and we are confident we will have cooperation from the other operators as the agency works to address this issue." RRC staff could also require changes to operators' permits to address seismic activity. Rattler Midstream Operating is a subsidiary of the Midland-based Diamondback Energy, where Vice President of Government Affairs Mark Dingler said, "At Diamondback Energy and Rattler, we are working to respond to the Texas Railroad Commission's correspondence from September 23rd regarding input on disposal volumes. We will continue to work with the Commission to determine the best operational path forward while ensuring the safety of our employees and the community, which is our first priority," Dingler said. Rattler was reported to have 8 wells. ConocoPhillips spokesman Dennis Nuss of Houston said COG operating his company's subsidiary with 15 wells was already compliant. "Protecting the safety of our communities and the environment is our top priority," Nuss said. While none of our operated saltwater disposal wells within the Gardendale seismic response area inject more than 10,000 barrels per day, we support the Railroad Commission's recent actions and will comply with all related requests. Occidental Petroleum with 4 wells, Pioneer Natural Resources with 8, and Wasser Operating, owned by Mabee Ranch and having a well permitted for 60,000 barrels per day that the RRC said should be lowered to a sixth of that, did not respond to requests for comments. The U.S. Geological Survey reported a 3.7 magnitude quake 8 miles northwest of Midland, September 7th, and it said 6 of greater than 3.5 magnitude had occurred in that area among a total of 81 of 1.5 magnitude and above during the past 18 months. COVID-19 news. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 25,438 total cases, 519 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 5 students and 2 staff. Midland County, 27,786 total cases, 359 deaths. Texas, 4,184,467 total cases, 69,103 deaths. U.S. cases, 44,979,605 total confirmed and 726,206 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. MCH daily COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital daily COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Tuesday. 40 total COVID patients in-house. Medical surgical non-critical, 20 COVID patients. 14 unvaccinated, 2 vaccinated, 4 unknown. Critical care, 20 COVID patients, 16 on ventilator. 14 unvaccinated, 2 vaccinated, 4 unknown. Of the 15 COVID patients on ventilator, 2 are vaccinated, 11 are unvaccinated, 3 are unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 19 to 93 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Andrews, 2 from Big Spring, 1 from Camp Wood, 1 from El Jardin, 3 from Fort Stockton, 3 from Kermit, 1 from Midland, 1 from Toya. The rest are from Odessa, Ector County. Quick hits. Art Tales. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Art Tales for ages 3 through 5 and their grown-ups at 10 a.m. today. Admission is free. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Trunk or Treat. Bubba's 33, 6153 East Highway 91 has invited the community to trick or treat at the restaurant from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. The Odessa Police Department and other vendors and organizations will be present. Costume contest will take place at 7:45 p.m. Visit bubbas33.com. Singing Men of West Texas. Singing Men of West Texas will perform in concert at 7 p.m. Thursday at Central Baptist Church, 1401 North Texas Avenue. Visit tinyurl.com/38DDHC8M. Hunters Moonwalk and Run. The West Texas Gazelles has scheduled a Hunter's Moonwalk and Run to benefit Pink the Basin at 8 p.m. This is Thursday at MCH Mission Fitness, 8050 Texas Highway 191, Frontage Road. Admission is $5 and all proceeds go directly to Pink the Basin. Estate Planning Seminar. The Midland College Foundation and the Midland Memorial Foundation has scheduled an estate planning seminar from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday on the Midland College main campus in the Scarborough Student Center Carrasco Room or virtually via Zoom. Topics will include complementing a family business succession plan, disclaimers in estate planning, funding trusts, trust administration, life insurance planning in an unprecedented environment, and tax planning ideas for higher income taxpayers. Professional development credit will be issued to attorneys and certified public accountants through the MC Workforce Continuing Education Department. All in-person seating is limited. For more information, call 432-685-4556 or visit midland.edu. West Texas Winds. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will present West Texas Winds, Our Favorite Volumes, Volume 2 at 7:30 p.m., Thursday at the Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard. General admission is $15 and students is $5. The concert will include Irving Fine, Partita for Wind Quintet, Jean-Michel Damas, Dix Sept Variations, Op 22, Eugene Boza, Scherzo Op 48, and Eric Ewison, Roaring Fork. Tickets are available at the door. Concert. Radney Foster is scheduled to perform at 7:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788 in Midland. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, go to wagnernoel.com. Coffee for a Cure. The Human Bean, 2007 North Big Spring, Midland, has scheduled Coffee for a Cure benefiting the Breast Cancer Patient Navigation Program at Midland Center Health System Friday. 100% of proceeds will benefit the Breast Cancer Patient Navigation Program at MCHS. Dia de los Muertos Parade. Dia de los Muertos Parade will start at 11 a.m. October 30th, starting at Hacienda Vieja, 1701 North Grant Avenue, then lead south on Grant Avenue, then stop at the ECISD Administration Building on 9th Street. To sponsor, volunteer, or for more information, call Jesse Porras at 432-770-9423. Fall Festival. Faith Fellowship Lutheran Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a fall festival from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 30th in the back parking lot. There will be games, prizes, hot dogs, popcorn, and fun activities for all ages. For more information, call 432-362-2549. Spooktacular. Ector County Library and Friends and Downtown Odessa have scheduled a spooktacular party in the park from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th at the library, 321 West 5th Street. Free treats will be given out. You may visit facebook.com/ Ector County Library or ector.lib.tx.us. Partnership Working to Create College Pathway. Making a promise to all graduates of high schools in the Permian Basin that they can go to and through college, and how to do that was the main item of discussion at the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin Zoom meeting Tuesday. Partnership co-chair Colin Sewell said it would make a huge impact on the region to offer that chance to students and families. He noted that other states and regions have done this. In a region that has such a drastic need for great education for our young people, I can think of no better way that we could put an exclamation mark on our commitment to education than to consider the opportunity of providing college education for anybody and everybody in the Permian Basin, Sewell said. He added that it would have an impact when recruiting people to come to the area, and that it would have a ripple effect in that it would benefit those moving to the community and pay dividends for their children. I know that there have been pockets of those situations in Midland. There are different scholarships that are out there, but to be able to say as a region that this is possible for children, I think could really be a true change in what Midland-Odessa looks like and what the Permian Basin looks like going forward, he said. Eric Ban, Executive Director of Economic Mobility Systems, is connected to the Commit Partnership in Dallas, Executive Director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, Adrian Vega said. Ban said there is clearly a gap in the post-secondary skills talent in the regional college enrollment. He said counties in the Permian Basin are below the state average of 51.2% of students attending college after high school. Ban said there are a lot of dollars on the table that are not being used. And if you look at the financial aid forms that were not completed, and if you look at the House Bill 3, CCMR, College Career and Military Readiness, outcomes bonus that was not pulled down and realized in the year, that's quite a bit of money that's out there. If we had a plan, we could leverage existing dollars to help pay for that plan. Ban said they started Dallas County Promise in 2017, and built a lot of data, infrastructure, and some strategies based on the Tennessee Promise in terms of mobilizing our community, increasing financial aid completion, increasing college enrollment, and then looking at data over time to understand student needs as they travel through higher education to help ensure that there's wraparound support services and workforce alignment driving toward equitable outcomes. Ban said Texas has the third lowest community college tuition in the country, but 6 out of 10 Texans are economically disadvantaged and mostly qualify for federal financial aid. So, for Dallas County, for example, 3 out of 4 students are economically disadvantaged. They've had a free college path for a long time. If we can get their financial aid complete, which was a big challenge. We have a lot of budget planning tools, and we work with higher ed partners and really kind of cost model out what they have in their foundations, what their scholarship strategies are, what if we increase financial aid, what if we potentially worked with kindergarten through 12. This is a new one because we're starting to work with Tyler, Sherman, and Denton on what if we could leverage those House Bill $3 dollars together. And what if we put that in front of the students in terms of gamification so that the students can pull down some of those House Bill $3 dollars and carry it with them to the public institutions in their region to offset some of the scholarships, Ban said. Sewell said it's not a question of whether dollars are available. It's helping students understand how to access it and walk them through the process. Lorraine Perryman, co-chair of the Education Partnership, said she knows Ector County ISD and she assumed other districts in the region don't have an adequate number of advisors and counselors. She added that some families don't emphasize going to college. Perryman said they want to change that and added that a lot of that comes through advising and asked what the ideal ratio would be of students to counselor. Ban said there is more than $22 million in outcomes bonus money available. If you look at the ratios, being a former high school principal for many years, the ratio that is optimal is 250-1 in terms of counselor to student. I know we don't often look like that in public high schools, Ban said. Bridget Worley, Executive Director of the Texas Impact Network, said training is crucial for counselors. You can't just fill positions with bodies. The training for the current advisors and new advisors is incredibly important. But I also just throw in the public funding that is coming in from the federal government right now in terms of ESSER and ARP. Texas is in a very lucky situation. And where everyone else may be facing a potential fiscal cliff with the federal dollars because they will disappear at some point, but because of the outcomes-based funding in the CCMR space, effective use of those dollars could actually generate revenue that could continue to pay for things, Worley said. Because of the way outcomes-based funding works, if you're putting in place individuals in training that is producing more students who are graduating, college-ready, and successfully transitioning to post-secondary, they will produce funding somewhere between $3,000 and $7,000 per student, which goes back into the system and pays for those counselors. ECISD Associate Director Curriculum and Instruction Lilia Nanez said the district has 9 vacancies, which is quite big and alarming. Nanez said they talk about growing their own, but the vacancies are immediate. So this network together will really help us create interest, create opportunity for teachers to go get their master's for counseling, because it sounds great to have 250 caseloads for a counselor. But that's just not our reality. So working with this group and coming up with ways that we can recruit people to earn that master's degree is something we are definitely interested in, Nanez said. Sewell suggested that community colleges and universities could deploy their own people to the school districts. I do think that's something that we should consider from our higher ed partners, and I do not believe that you have to have a PhD to help a young person figure out how to go to college, and we may need to challenge our norms on what our expectations are for those roles when it comes to college advising. I'm not talking about the counselor role as a whole, but if we think about the function of somebody being able to help sit down and go through the process of college, we may need to rethink some of our norms, and that might help open up some of those places, not to diminish the effort, the work, or the education. That's not what I'm saying. But we may have to rethink that, just like we've had to think how we train and develop teachers to be able to fill that pipeline as well, Sewell said. A future meeting to determine next steps will be scheduled. Affidavit shows events leading to fatal punch. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 38-year-old man punched another man who later died from his injuries. Victor Taryn Gonzalez was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. The report incident happened around 10:11 p.m. October 14th in the parking lot of the DK convenience store located at 3900 Tanglewood Lane, the affidavit stated. The victim, identified as Ross Walker, was reportedly lying on the ground unconscious in a pool of blood. Walker had serious bodily injury, namely brain trauma, from which he later died on October 15th. Walker also had fractures to his face, as well as a broken rib. Video surveillance showed shortly after Walker pulled his truck into the DK parking lot, a gray four-door sedan pulled into the parking lot after him. The affidavit stated, the suspect, later identified as Gonzalez, exited the vehicle and approached Walker in an aggressive manner. Video reportedly shows Gonzalez pushing Walker, then cocking his arm far back and striking Walker. Walker dropped to the ground, and based on his injuries and the evidence at the crime scene, it is believed that Walker struck his head on a rock on the ground. Gonzalez was contacted by detectives, the affidavit stated. Gonzalez stated to a detective that he was driving west on Maple Avenue when Walker ran a stop sign, almost crashing into Gonzalez, who was driving a gray Nissan Sentra. Gonzalez stated he saw Walker pull into the DK parking lot, so he pulled in and confronted Walker. Gonzalez reportedly admitted to striking Walker. Gonzalez was arrested, charged, and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 16th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon. Assistant Fire Chief gives Regeneron Clinic update. During Tuesday's work session, Odessa Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Rod Huber explained to City Council the Regeneron Infusion Clinic has served more than 1,800 people. Huber said infusion numbers are starting to decline, however, the clinic will remain as it's one of the top hubs in the state. There was a supply scare in the middle of September, but that hiccup, Huber said, hasn't happened since, and he reassured the city council the infusion clinic has plenty of Regeneron. The state has assured me personally that this is one of their top 10 to 12 sites in the state, Huber said during the work session. Since this is a regional site, there is priority set for this site. That made us feel good. Huber also mentioned at the conclusion of the COVID vaccine clinic on October 6th at UTPB Park that there were more than 1,000 vaccinations administered. Odessa Housing Finance Corporation Executive Director Jill Miller spoke about the plans for the 7.65-acre lot located on Rochester Avenue on the south side of Odessa. The housing would be for low to moderate income families. When District 3 Council members Detra White asked if the homes would take 5 years to build, Miller responded it should take much less time. I think once it gets started and we get excitement rolling and that hopefully we will have the same effect as the other large builders in town, Miller said during the meeting. Odessa Traffic Operations Superintendent Hal Feldman presented to the City Council about considering purchasing traffic signal equipment, which includes replacement of cabinets at 13 intersections throughout the city. There would also be 7 additional cabinets purchased as spares. Feldman also said that if any of the cabinets have artistic wrap around them, that he will contact Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm about getting them re-wrapped. Obituaries. Roger Boyd. Roger Farrell Boyd was born in Abilene, Texas on September 1st, 1933 to Farrell and Ferry Lee Boyd. He entered the gates of heaven on October 17th, 2021. Service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 21st, 2021, at Abilene Municipal Cemetery in Abilene, Texas. Roger is survived by his wife, Iwanda, son, Roger Boyd and Deanna of Odessa, daughter, Darla Batla and Gary of St. Lawrence, 3 grandchildren, sisters, Jean Dalton and Wanda Beard, and numerous nieces and nephews. Roger is preceded in death by his parents and grandchildren, Clinton Boyd, Boyd Batla, and Kayla Boyd Knox. Donations can be made to your favorite charity. Billy Bob Hood from Richmond, Texas. Billy, Bill B. Hood, aged 81, husband of Laura Hood, passed away peacefully at home after a long battle with pulmonary fibrosis on 10/17/2021. Bill was born on February the 8th, 1940, in Lawton, Oklahoma, to William Don Hood and Era Neville Martin Hood. Bill is survived by his wife of 28 years, Laura Elizabeth Hood, his son, William Robert Hood of Dickinson, Texas, and his 2 daughters, Annetta Gay Perry, husband James Perry of Santa Fe, Texas, and Tracy Allison, husband Marty Allison of Texas City, Texas. In addition, Bill was blessed with 6 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Tributes and words of condolence may be left for the family at www.davisgreenlawnfh.com. The funeral will also be live-streamed on our website. Arrangements are under the direction of Davis Greenlawn Funeral Home, Rosenberg, Texas. Geneva Earlene Harrison Lewis. Geneva Earlene Harrison Lewis was born August 17, 1932, in Cook County, Texas, to Earl and Neva Walker Harrison, and she heeded her Lord's call into his kingdom October 13, 2021. The rest is a footnote. Earlene was preceded in death by her parents, her brother Gene, her sister Nina, her husband Teddy, her son Timothy, her granddaughter Jennifer, and her great-grandson Barnabas. She is survived and mourned by her brother Stanley and his wife Annette, by her sons David, Mark, and Stephen, her daughters-in-law Cindy, Cecilia, Deborah, and Jeanette, and by her 7 grandchildren. A memorial service is scheduled at Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Pembroke Street, Odessa, Texas, October 23rd at 11 a.m. with Pastor Bob Thayer officiating. Gifts to Odessa Bible Church, Child Evangelism Fellowship, or other charities may be given in lieu of flowers. Condolences to the family may be made to acreswestfuneral.com. Edith Geraldine Williams Presley. Edith Geraldine Presley, age 89, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Saturday, October 16, 2021. Edith was born June 12, 1932, to the late Edna Ash and Mel Williams. Edith is survived by her husband of 73 years, Julian Coach Presley of Odessa, son John Presley of Longview, daughters Julie Cupper of Odessa, Elaine Coulson of Stone Mountain, Georgia, and Debbie Henderson of Odessa, 8 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents and sister, Yvonne Gray. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, October 20th, 2021, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Thursday, October 21st, 2021, at 10 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly, followed by interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.